My guest today is Rochelle Carrington, and if, like me, you've been fortunate enough to hear Rochelle speak, you know that you're in for a treat anytime you get to listen to her. And today, Rochelle is going to talk to me about what she has done specifically to change her own mindset, her own outlook, her own sense of self in order to be the success that she is today. Rochelle, you're very welcome to the show. Rochelle, I'd like to start by asking you where you're from, first of all, and how you got into sales. Tell me a little bit about your background.
Okay, will do. First of all, thank you for having me. I really appreciate that. Originally from Scottsdale, Arizona, I had an obsession with New York City early on since I was about 12 years old. Decided that I was going to go live there even though I'd never been there. And so through a lot of, goals and figuring out how I would get to New York City, I've now lived in New York City and just outside of the city for about the last 25 years.
And in terms of sales, was New York the first time you got involved in sales?
No, I originally first got involved in sales in Chicago. I lived in Chicago for 5 years prior to moving to New York. And I guess the interesting thing was that my father has always been in sales. So I grew up in a sales kind of oriented family. I thought originally that I wanted to be on the editorial side of magazine publishing. So I wanted to go work for Glamour magazine and be an editor. And when I was a junior in college, I went to an NYU summer publishing institute where I learned all about what it means to be an editor. And also this weird thing, which was ad salespeople, which I had never even thought of or considered or even knew existed. And as I was in this program, I learned a couple of things. One was that if you're in sales, you make a lot more money than you do in editorial. And so I kind of liked that concept. And then the other was that you could rise up in the ranks from a sales standpoint much faster than you could in an editorial. And so at that point, that's kind of when I decided I still want to work in magazines, but I'm going to go on the sales side of it rather than the editorial side of it. And so right out of college, I started with a very small publisher of a regional magazine in Chicago. And that's how I got started at 21 selling.
And the fact that your father was involved in sales, you didn't really have any stigma then coming into sales.
No, I didn't at all. And so once I kind of figured out that sales was the route that I wanted to go into, and I sort of talked my way into a job telling them that I knew all about selling, even though I was 21 and I had no idea, I really relied on my dad a lot, going back to him and saying, how do I do this? I have this job now. Now what? What do I do? And so he was very helpful in helping me to figure some of that out initially.
So if you were to go back to those days with everything you've learned since and be a fly on the wall, what would you see do differently, or what would you be thinking about differently? The seller back then, how was she different?
Well, back then I was doing what we would call the typical show up and throw up. So it was really all about, I think, two things for me. One was, how am I going to present? And the second was, how will I overcome objections? And those were really my only two kind of focuses. Now what I would have said to myself, if I were, the person I am now, going back to that 21-year-old, what I would tell her is, how do you ask better questions? How do you really understand somebody's business? And then talk about you. So really focus on them first and then you. And I was kind of doing the opposite, like a lot of salespeople do initially.
So at some stage between then and now, you must have had some light bulb moment, some awakening that says, hang on a second. Because that change, bringing about that change you spoke about, is not an overnight process. It's not simple. But what was the turning point for you?
So the turning point was I had been in magazine publishing for about 16 years. I did 8 years on the sales side and I did 8 years managing salespeople. And I got to a point where I just was burnt out. I was working at some very good magazines, Glamour magazine, Marie Claire magazine, things, magazines with really great brand names. But what I was seeing with my salespeople is that we were working really, really hard, and we were hitting numbers, but it was just too hard. And so I got completely burnt out on the whole thing. And I started to say, well, what could I do differently? I want out of sales. At that point, I wanted to do something completely different, because I thought that the problem was, you know, just the industry's getting too tough and I've been doing it too long and I just need something different. At that point, I got introduced to Sandler, which I had never, you know, heard of or known before. And really the light bulb moment was when Sandler kind of described this whole concept of the buyer-seller dance and how we were really going out there doing our show up and throw up, and it just wasn't working anymore. That the prospect had a whole different agenda, that what they needed was something different than what we were doing. And that's when I said, you know, it's not that sales is bad, it's just that the way we're doing it is outdated and just isn't working as well as it used to. And that's when I went, I got to learn this Sandler stuff, because I don't want to continue to show up, get put off, have the objection. It just was getting to be, too difficult and too boring and too laborious.
And how long did it take you, though, to go from that burnt out individual to being on top of your own game and being energized about sales again?
Well, I think the energized was when I saw, you know, what Sandler laid out in terms of the sales philosophy. I mean, right then I was like, if I could learn that, this whole thing is going to change. So the energizing moment was pretty quick. What took a lot longer is learning how to do it. That was the hard part. And just relearning how to sell after 16 years of thinking that I pretty much knew everything and that I was pretty good at what I did. And I think I was pretty good, but I think I could have been way, way better in those 16 years if I had known some of this philosophy. So it probably took a good, I think, 2 years to really get comfortable and feel like, you know, I really knew what I was doing, because I had to replace a lot of bad habits. And then every year you just get better and better and better. And I don't know that there's any time where you just say, hey, I've mastered everything, because you can always get better and have slight improvements. Now what I'm looking at is, how do I have little improvements? Back then I had to have big, huge, like fill the gap improvements. And so the nice thing is that after doing this for 10 years, I don't need those giant gap improvements as much.
So then talk to me about that transition process, the parts, first of all, the parts that you adapted to easily. And then talk to me a little bit about the parts of the process that you struggled with that really did take a lot longer to own.
So if we just look at from a Sandler process standpoint itself, upfront contract, I understood very, very easily. And that was the thing that I think was the easiest for me to adopt. And I loved it because it made an instant change in setting up times with people, getting the amount of time I needed, setting the agenda, and getting an outcome. And I tend to be an outcome-oriented person, so it made perfect sense for me. Pain was a little bit more challenging, really trying to figure out what are all these questions, and especially when you have to get into things like impact to people and some of those emotions. We didn't talk about any of that, in my earlier career. So even being a girl, that was still really hard for me to really get people to open up with that. And then I think the other piece that was a challenge a lot of times was the budget part of it. And really being able to talk about money really openly, long before just creating a proposal for someone. Because the old world was create the proposal and then find out that they don't have the money. And now what I was being taught is find out what that budget is and then create your proposal or your scope of work to fit that, so that you don't have to redo it so many times. And so that was a big transition for me also.
Okay, so you are well known for your belief in selling or developing productive sales habits. And I saw a talk you gave, and one of the tips you gave on habit forming, which is crucial to success, was how to tag on a habit to an existing habit. And that was a huge breakthrough for me, because you know, even just doing a daily task list for me was something I struggled with to make that a habit. I like diets, you do it for a while and then something else would come along and you just forget about it, and that was it was gone. And it was, so what I did with that was I said, okay, what do I do habitually? And you mentioned brushing your teeth in the morning. Everybody does that. Well, okay, I'm not going to do my task list, my journal when I'm brushing my teeth, but shortly after, when I'm having my breakfast, I love a cup of coffee. Every morning day starts with a proper cup of coffee. And so now what I did was I said, I am not having my coffee unless opened up beside me is my journal. And then, you know, once it's open, it's easy to do it.
Right.
And that worked wonders for me. What I'd like to do is maybe tap into some of those other tips that you had that you have found particularly useful, or that you find talking to others that they gravitate towards, that, you know, their light bulb moments.
Okay, yeah. So the bundling, obviously, which is what you're talking about, tacking something onto something else, it helps you remember to do a habit when initially one of the challenges we have is we just don't even remember to do it because it's not something we do regularly. So that's a big one. I think one other that makes a massive difference, and it's a place where I also have a lot of passion, is your mindset and your belief system. And so one of the biggest things when you're creating a new habit is that you have to start to think of yourself as the type of person who does that and describe yourself in that way even before that habit is fully formed. So one of the things that I really got into about 4 or 5 years ago was just, you know, really being consistent with exercise and cleaning up my eating in a big way so that I wasn't eating so much sugar and junk and eating in between meals. And that's always been a big weakness of mine. And so one of the ways that I had to do that was I just decided that I was a 6-day-a-week exerciser. And that was just what it is. And whenever anybody would ask me about anything related to exercise, I just say, I always work out 6 days a week. And once I decided that that's who I was, what happened is the only thing that I would think about every week was what's the one day I'm not going to exercise, because I know that I exercise 6 days a week. It's what I always do and I don't miss it. I just figure out the one day that I'm not going to. And that made that 6-day-a-week exercise habit much, much easier. I would journal, I'm a 6-day-a-week exerciser. I would journal, I'm a clean eater. And so when you talk to yourself as that is who you are, and it really just becomes something that you believe about in yourself and you tell everybody else, when the moment comes in the morning when, you know, I used to go, ugh, I don't want to get up, my brain goes, but you exercise 6 days a week. It's who you are. So you just, you know, you have to do it. That's just what you do. And so it became much easier for me to, you know, get myself out of bed and just do that. So I think whatever that habit is that you're looking to create is you've got to talk to yourself as if you already do it. I am a 7-day-a-week journaler, or I am, you know, a clean eater, or I always eat vegetables before dessert, or whatever it is that you want to do. It really helps to believe that, so that your brain just goes, this is what you do every day. Just like we would all say, I brush my teeth, I take a shower every day. There's no question about it. We all do that. And so that's kind of how what you need to do with some of those habits as well.
That sounds to me like what happened to me a few years ago. I was with a colleague and I was complaining about the fact I wasn't organized. And what he said to me was to write down every day, I am simple and organized. I keep it simple and organized. And he says, do that and keep doing that for several weeks. And then you'll find you actually become. So it sounds to me like what you're doing there is you're actually changing your sense of self-concept, or is that going too far?
No, that's exactly what you're doing. You have to change your self-concept in order to be able to live up to those things that you want to do. So I was talking to someone this morning who said, it was an 8 o'clock phone call. And she said, you know, I have to apologize. I'm really not a morning person. And I said, well, do you want to be a morning person? And she was like, well, yeah, I mean, that would be helpful. So I said, well, then stop saying you're not. I mean, why are you telling yourself you're not one? Yeah. If you want to be one, don't describe yourself in that way. Start describing yourself as I'm a morning person. And what happens is that subconscious mind will believe it, and it will start to create it. And it doesn't happen overnight necessarily, but it's far better telling yourself that than it is to say, I'm not a morning person. I'm really lethargic. My brain isn't working quite well yet. Because if you say that, that's what's going to happen.
I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to start going, I am a morning person, because I do know by the time it gets to 10 o'clock, I'll probably fall asleep in front of the TV anyway. So I might as well pick one end of the day I can control.
Exactly.
I was going to ask you then, because this really does open up a whole other, I don't want to call it a can of worms, but it's certainly, it's an area we could spend a lot of time on, which is the whole self-concept. And what I wanted to ask you was, you said by telling yourself that I work out 6 days a week, you are changing your own sense of concept. What are some of the other areas of self-concept that you felt that maybe you needed to change as you went from the advertising sales rep to who you are now? How do you see yourself differently?
Oh my gosh, there's so many ways I've changed dramatically since that time. So I think there's a few things. One of the first things that I had to kind of overcome, especially in being new in the business, was that I can talk to presidents and CEOs, and that I was a real president and CEO, even though at that particular time I had nobody else working for me, it was just me. So to see myself as a conceptual equal to people who had far more employees, and at that point when I first started, far more revenue than I did. So the self-concept of seeing yourself as equal, I think is really important, and something that sometimes people struggle with if they're younger than the people that they call on, or they're older than the people that they call on. That they somehow just don't see themselves as equal, or they're calling on a very high level person and they don't have a high level title. And so that was one that I had to work on. And the other was, I always ask great questions and people are always willing to answer them. Because in Sandler, we learn to ask a lot of questions. And initially you kind of feel like, my gosh, I mean, I'm asking so many, are people gonna be kind of like taken aback on this and tell me quit asking questions? And how am I gonna come up with all those questions? Because I don't know exactly how to do this yet. So a lot of it was, you know, the questions that I ask are gonna be great questions and everyone's gonna wanna answer them. And so that really helped as well. And I think the other thing that's made a massive difference for me was, there are times when you can get very stressed out in any sort of business. And I would go home at night and do what a lot of people do, which is like, oh my gosh, I have so much stuff to do. I'm going to be up all night doing all these different things. I got to catch up. Don't have time during the day. More to do than, what I actually have time for. And the interesting thing is when you tell yourself, I'm so busy or I'm so stressed, you can feel your body kind of closing up. Mm-hmm. And so what I learned to do was tell myself, I always get the important things done. And when you do that, you can kind of feel like this release, like your body just goes, okay, there's no stress. I get the important things done. And so once I started to do that, when I would, tackle some of those things, number one, it helped me to choose the important things and not just stuff. So it's not about checking stuff off the task list. It's about what's the 20% that's going to make the biggest difference rather than doing the 80% that really doesn't matter as much. It also allowed me to be much more creative and a better problem solver because my brain wasn't completely stressed out about how much I had to do. And to pick one or two things to accomplish. And so that has just completely changed the way I approach everything with just, a degree of far more calmness and really not getting stressed rarely, very rarely, just knowing that that is my self-concept, is that I always get the important things done, no matter what. And the rest of it, most of the time, doesn't really matter.
Well, you don't just ask great questions, Rochelle. You also raise great questions, because as I listen to you, I have this chicken and egg question in my head. When it comes to changing beliefs and changing self-concept, the approach you're taking is to act as if. So I tell myself that I speak to presidents. I tell myself that I work out 6 days a week. But I've also heard other people say, well, if I want to change beliefs, the way to do it is to behave that way. Are they separate things, or maybe it's they're both the same thing? They're just two sides of the same coin.
I think that it's two sides of the same coin. I don't think you can have one without the other, because I can tell myself I'm a 6 day a week exerciser, but if I never get out of bed to do it, then I, you know, at some point my brain goes, you're just lying to yourself. So I have to commit to the belief, and then I have to execute on what that belief tells me to do. And when you've got both of those, then what you don't have to worry about so much is willpower and just letting motivation, you know, do I feel like it? Do I have the energy in the morning? You know, at this point, it doesn't matter whether I have the energy in the morning. It doesn't matter. I work out when I'm sick. I work out just, it's always 6 days. It's just, that's just what you do. But it did take time to build that. And I had to tell myself every morning, this is what you do. This is who you are. So go do it. So I think you've got to work both of them together, and it's much stronger.
Does climbing the stairs to go back to bed for a nap, does that count as exercise?
It depends on how many stairs and how fast you climb them.
Well, I'm a stair master, so it could be. Maybe I got to run back down a few times. Yeah. But it sounds to me then what we're talking about with the affirmations and the behavior is really what the affirmations are doing is it's almost like it's pricking your subconscious. It's bringing an awareness to it. And then you've got to have the discipline to actually go follow through.
Right.
All right.
Absolutely. So. And I think once you can start to change that belief, the follow through just becomes easier. It just becomes, so you don't have to sit there and force yourself. Because your brain goes, this is who you are. Just as if we were to describe ourselves, you know, I would say that I'm tall, I've got brown hair and blue eyes. That's a matter of fact. That's just how I was born. That's what I am. There's no guess about it. Sometimes I have brown hair. I always have brown hair. I have my entire life. And so I think that some of these habits that we want have to just become a matter of fact. And they're a way you would describe yourself, just as you would with your hair color, your eye color, and your height. So it sort of just becomes that easy, that if I can make it that matter of fact, it's just what happens.
Makes perfect sense to me. One of the things you read about a lot are changes that are happening in both the buyer-seller dynamic, enabled by technology, and how sales teams go to market, again, enabled by changes in technology. What do you see are the, I guess what I'm trying to do with this, when I ask you what are the biggest changes, I'm really trying to get a sense of what has changed, but what hasn't changed in terms of that dynamic between team buyer center. What is still true, but what's new, if anything?
Well, I think what hasn't changed is that selling is still between, let's just say, two people, even though sometimes you're selling to a group or a committee, but it's between human beings. And that in order to really sell, and again, it depends a little bit on what you're selling, but in order to really sell high ticket service, you know, high ticket products, something other than just, you know, a box of hair clips or something, you've got to have a conversation with people. And what hasn't changed is that people want to feel understood. They want to feel like you understand their business, their problem, and you're there to help them and not just have a price tag on their head that says, if I get this deal, I now get to make money and, you know, go on vacation. So I don't think that has changed at all. I think what has changed is the way that we can have those conversations, that people obviously have more information a lot of times before they come to the table to buy from you. And so we don't need to, you know, quote unquote, educate the customer as much, because they already know the information. They may know exactly what your product is and services and what the delivery of that is. Where I think sales really comes in is helping them to understand the problems that they have in their business that perhaps they haven't ever thought of, that they haven't thought of it in a really deep way. And that's what the Sandler system really helps people to figure out if you're doing those questions right, is those genius moments where they suddenly go, wow, that was a really good question. I've never thought about the impact of my business in that way. They can't find that on the internet. They can't find that on your website. They're not going to get that from a video from you. That's what that one-on-one conversation really is useful for and is necessary for, in my opinion. So yeah. I think the beauty of it is we can put out information, and video is obviously a big way that people are doing that now. So we can cut out some of that education about what exactly your product and service is, but you still have to have the conversation about what is that prospect's problem, and then how does my product or service fit into the solution to solve that problem for them.
Because I often wonder, do people misinterpret some of the research that's out there? Because you read all the research that says, well, prospects are so much more informed before they even talk to a salesperson. Therefore, the salesperson is not needed as much. But if you flip that on its head, I'm wondering, you know, with all those choices out there, and because it's so easy to get information, does that not just lead to a lot of confusion? And therefore, because of that confusion or potential confusion, they actually need salespeople more, or certainly may rely on the seller as the differentiator. That if I'm looking to understand what's the best option for me, A, B, or C, really does it come down to which salesperson I believe the most or which one I warm to the most? And therefore that kind of the technology advances have maybe solved one problem but created another.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you. It's kind of like, you know, if you're feeling sick, you can go on the internet and you can type in your symptoms and it will tell you this is what you have. But there's a variety of things that you may have. And I can then take that information and go to the doctor and say, I have this. I want a prescription for that. But as we say in Sandler, the problem the prospect brings you is never the real problem. I'm not a doctor. My information came from the internet. I don't know all the inner workings of the body that a doctor would. And so the doctor has to take all that information that, great, I now know what different symptoms may cause different diseases or sicknesses, but it is not my job, and I don't have that enough of a knowledge base to really say this is what your prescription or your, you know, health plan should be. And I think the same thing applies to selling, is that it's easy for people to go on and say, okay, I want IT services, and I understand that I could buy a package for $1,000 a month and it will give me this, this, and that. But if we go back to the concept that the problem the prospect brings you is never the real problem, the real question is, does that prospect truly understand what their problem is? And I think 90% of the time the answer is no. And so that's where the salesperson has to come in, ask a lot of really good questions to determine what the real problem is and whether that package that the prospect thinks they need is the correct package. Because otherwise, all we have are people running around asking for prescriptions that may or may not help them because they don't have that full knowledge of what the problem is. And the salesperson's job is to help uncover in a deep way what the real problem is of that prospect.
That sounds to me, Rochelle, like a very fine line whereby, A, you have to know the prospect's business very well in terms of their industry, and what are some of the typical challenges that they may have with that? So you need that background information, but at the same time, you can't come in like a bull in a china shop saying, I have the answer. How do you manage that fine line between saying, I have the answer and knowing their industry and the temptation to jump in and give answers?
Well, I mean, again, I've mentioned this a lot, but I think it just comes back to, how do I ask enough questions so that I don't have to tell the answer to the prospect, that they're actually asking me for the answer? And if I know, I always try to put myself in the position of the prospect. If I was sitting at your desk every single day, regardless of what you do, what would I be experiencing? What are the things that I would be frustrated with? What are the things that would be challenging for me? What are the things that I'd be throwing up my hands in the air going, I don't even know what to do about this? And when you know what your product or service is and you apply that into somebody's business and you think about what are the problems that they would be having that my product or service can fix, then it allows you to put yourself in their shoes. And that then allows you to come up with questions that help them to realize the issues that they're having. And I think the biggest thing, and I know I definitely struggled with this and still do sometimes, is rushing to solution too quickly. Mm. That you kind of go, I've heard this story 5,000 times. I already know what you need. Let's just cut to the chase. Just buy this thing. It'll fix it all and we'll be on our way. And it's that whole concept of you got to slow down to speed up. Because when they're talking about their issues, it's really the first time that they are thinking about these things in a deep way. If you're using the Sandler Pain Funnel, you may have heard it 20 times that week from all different prospects. They're talking about it for the first time. So we have to be patient, knowing that they've got to work their way through this thought process, even though you might be 10 steps ahead of them, knowing where you think it's going to go. So if you can slow down, it will speed the entire process up at the end, but it really is sometimes, you know, an act of patience, which sometimes is a tough thing.
That sounds to me like, I heard Neil Diamond talk about this some years ago. He talked about the fact that he goes out on stage every night and he sings the same songs. He knows them, you know, he knows every word, every nuance, and the temptation is just to go through the moments. Or sorry, to the motions. But he said, you got to remember that for the audience, that may be the very first time they've heard this live. So yes. Therefore, you've got to perform to their expectations, not to ours.
Yeah, that's a great one. I love that story. That's great. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
We're coming up close to our time, Rochelle, and I wanted to ask you, as you look at your business today, and when I say your business, I'm talking about your sales game specifically. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you no longer need to make these big leaps, that they're now adjustments. What are the kind of things that you look at and you go, ooh, I need to work on this area, I need to work in that area? And then what are you most proud of?
Okay, so there's a lot of things I could work on. The list could be very, very long. I always think that I can always get better at that budget step, at really kind of defining with people what the scope of work is going to be and making sure that, you know, there's no mutual mystification around the investment of time and money. And so that one, I think for the rest of my life, will be one that I can work on. I think pain is something you can work on forever. There's always more questions. There's always different ways. Really, you know, constantly using reversing. And I guess the third one for me would be the decision step, which sometimes I get a little bored with. I mean, by the time I get through pain and budget, I'm kind of like, let's just get to the end. I lose patience. That's where I've got to slow down as well. And to ask much better decision questions and process questions and helping people to walk through how they're going to make these kinds of decisions. That's another area that I think I could definitely continue to grow in also.
And you're most proud of in a sales context?
In a sales context, I'm really proud of the beliefs that I have been able to instill in my head that I've gotten rid of a lot of self-defeating beliefs that have allowed me to just have more strength and confidence when I go in and talk to people. And, you know, when I walk out of a sales call, whether I win or lose, I think one of the best things that I do is I get a clear future from everything. And that's probably the, I guess, the biggest thing that I would be proud of, is that I'm able to walk out with next step, either a no or a next step on the calendar every single time. And that's made a drastic difference for me, because it means I don't have to be as organized in follow-up because it's already on the calendar, that I don't, you know, things don't get falling through the cracks and everybody knows what we're doing next. And that was a big leap for me, because we never did that in my previous life. So I'm proud of that.
Final question, Rochelle, what advice would you give to your younger self?
My younger self would be, work on your head far earlier than I did. All that head trash, figuring out what that stuff is, and really working on, you know, reading and learning as much as possible about the mind and how it works, so that I could use that to help myself grow and just get better in what I do. I wish I had known all of that stuff when I was 21.
Rochelle, your story is inspirational. Your insights are powerful. So I want to thank you very much for sharing them with me and with everybody watching or listening. Where can people get in contact with you?
People can always contact me. My email address is rochelle@sandler.com. And that's probably the best way. Or you can call our office number, which is 914-273-4700.
And I'll make sure they're included in the video so people can write them down. Rochelle, thanks once again.
Thank you so much. It's been a lot of